In the last 10 minutes or so, we're going to get through the final phases here. Get you off to lunch or somewhere like that. So parturition or childbirth. This first image here is a model that was made in the 1770s to teach clinicians and midwives about the birth practice and about the position of the fetus in relation to the uterus and the birth canal. The equivalent model which we've got today for clinicians is down the bottom here, and this is an MRI showing the birth process itself. So the mother was lying inside an MRI machine and the scan was done while she was giving birth. The German researchers actually have a video of the process as it was occurring within the MRI. You'll see it's facing downwards. Here's the eye, here's the brain, and this is the birth canal, pubic symphysis, sacrum. And this is the direction of birth in this direction here. So pretty much what we already knew several hundred years ago. So the changes that occur at birth, and you'll go through this when you do the physiology and the pharmacology of it. Basically, you're getting growth of the fetus, pushing out on the uterine wall, and you're getting a contractile activity from the smooth muscle, sort of a reflex contractility. Now, it appears that the initial signal for birth comes actually from the fetus itself. So the fetus is the primer, the initiator of this quite complex process that we don't have time to mention today. But we'll go through a few of the key players. And that is progesterone maintains the pregnancy, originally from the corpus luteum and then by the placenta. And one of its roles is to hyperpolarize the myometrial cells and reduce its contractility. So in the early phases of pregnancy, the growth of the fetus, you don't get that contraction of the smooth muscle in response to it. The levels appear to fall just before parturition and allow, therefore, the activation of the smooth muscle and the contraction required to push the fetus out. The second hormone effect is from the estrogens, and these peak when parturition begins. And these have also a role in regulating myometrial contractility, so the actual function of squeezing this fetus out of the uterus. There are a number of other hormones which come into play as well in this soup, and that is oxytocin, a small peptide. It comes from the mother's pituitary and generally maintains the labour and is used synthetically to induce labour as well. And it increases the sensitivity of the muscle to these other hormones, estrogen. And then finally, prostaglandins, which are also used clinically in induction of labour as well. And these have a role in increasing the contractility as well. In addition to these hormonal effects coming from the mother, we also have environmental effects. And so most of the births occur in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, is about the peak birth time. It appears in humans, like other species, the external environment needs to be conducive for childbirth, a quiet environment, that you're feeling comfortable and confident in. The stages you'll go through when you do obstetrics, but there are three main stages: the dilatation stage, opening up the canal, the expulsion stage, which is pushing the fetus out, and then finally the third stage here, which is the placental stage, when the placenta itself is delivered. So the whole placenta is delivered along afterwards, after the fetus has been delivered, and it's important that the whole placenta is delivered at that time. Then the final stage, stage four here, recovery. This last stage takes about 18 years to take place. The mother needs to recover from childbirth. It takes quite some time to recover. But basically, this is the returning of the mother's physiology to the pre-pregnant state, the contraction of the uterus back down, and the re-establishment of the menstrual cycle. This also can be altered by breastfeeding and lactation, which can impact upon the changes. So in Australia, this division here shows you how the breakdown of all of the births in Australia, about 250,000 babies every year born, about 58% of them by normal vaginal delivery, by vertex presentation. Some of them that are difficult births have an instrument assistance, either forceps or a vacuum assistance. But we also have about 30% which are delivered by caesarean section, which according to the World Health Organization is about twice or three times the amount that's actually specified on the basis of the difficult birth or for clinical conditions requiring a caesarean section. So this means we're still delivering more infants in the hospital background by caesarean section than is actually physiologically required. So we're trying to keep a cap on this. At birth, as I mentioned to you before, we can classify the birth weight into these different criteria, and the normal birth weight is somewhere, for the normal period of gestation, somewhere between 2.5 to under 4 kilos is the normal birth weight. And you'd imagine that most of the growth conditions have been normal for this fetus. These high birth weight, which is described as macrosomia, occur in a variety of mother's clinical conditions. So, for example, in a diabetic mother, we tend to have extremely large infants that are born to diabetic mothers, and this can also lead to birth problems if they don't fit through the birth canal. And at the other end of the spectrum, as we drop down below 2.5 kilo, we go into the first classification, down to 1.5 kilo, which is low birth weight. This may be our preterm infants, but this may also be an interuterine growth restricted normal term pregnancy. Very low birth weight, which is below 1.5 kilos, which would be a preterm infant. And then extremely low birth weight, the ones you see in the very special care units, the very early term ones. These are less than a kilo and require substantial support to maintain them. Now, after birth, and this is my son, several years ago now, he's 20 years old. He doesn't like a picture of him being shown, but this is Christopher lying on his back at birth. And at birth, these are the things you need to be thinking about that need to work. These are the systems which come online and begin to function. And if they don't function normally after birth, this is when these major systemic abnormalities will become apparent. So we didn't need the cardiovascular system to activate the lungs and for all the pulmonary system to work before birth, but at birth, abnormalities in this system will become apparent when they're functioning. So circulatory problems, lung problems, endocrine problems, gut problems, and kidney problems. If these systems that are becoming functional postnatally aren't working correctly, then this will lead to neonatal issues in the hospital. And that transition in those early stages when the systems are becoming, when they're having their postnatal function, will highlight abnormalities in these systems. Other abnormalities may not become apparent till much later on. So things like neurological abnormalities may not become apparent until the learning milestones aren't reached or achieved. And things like audition or hearing are now tested for in the neonate or the newborn infants in the hospital using computer-based analysis, so you don't actually have to wait a couple of years to find out that they will respond to sounds. You can look for problems in hearing at birth and help them reach their milestones. In terms of respiration, I should mention that the newborn infant is slightly different from us in terms of breathing, in terms of the physics, the physiological function of breathing, and that is, in the adult rib cage, our ribs are slightly sloped down and tilted. And so when our intercostals contract, our lung volume changes substantially. Now, the newborn infant's rib cage is much more horizontal. And so the intercostal contraction in the newborn infant doesn't change the volume of the lung substantially. So the neonate, after birth, most of its breathing is done by a diaphragmatic breathing, and that is by contracting the diaphragm and changing the volume by contracting the diaphragm. There are a whole range of other issues here which you can read through in your own time. Just to make sure we finish on time, we'll be coming back and talking about system development in BGDB. I hope you've enjoyed learning about embryology and development of yourselves. Thank you very much.